Ok, à goutte de voir. Une chose de salvavis, char, ben un effet. Just find our place. So in Shar Cheshbon and Nefesh, we're in the Cheshbon. Hashmini. Yeah, okay. I believe this is what we ended with last week. Cheshbon Hashmini. And here he wants to impress on us. We discussed last week is bringing together two issues. First of all, a proper understanding of Hashem's oneness, which we're not going to spend much time on. What we call, in today's terms, we call that proofs of God. Right? We talked about this last week. This is what we talked about last week. Okay. But really, it's a bigger subject. This understanding, I'm not going to get into the full philosophy of it, but just in order to understand the connection going further, Hashem's oneness. As in appreciating what one really means. So let's just leave that for a moment and move on to the part that's really more practical to us, and that is number two. Number two is Yichud Halev is that the things that we do toward Hashem should be done with a wholehearted or single-minded dedication toward Hashem. Reason the two connect is that if we really appreciate quite how one Hashem is in the Bria, then we can get ourselves to a place where everything happening in my life is just Hashem. Let's try to bring this out a little more practically. Let's try to bring this out a little more practically. Remember the story of David HaMelech? David HaMelech was at the lowest point in his life. David HaMelech had a lot of low points in his life. Well, what we might say was the lowest point of his life was when he was running away from Yerushalayim, escaping Yerushalayim, when his son had rebelled against him, was trying to kill him. Right? Avshalom, everybody's familiar with the story of Avshalom. Avshalom, his son, rose up against him and wanted to kill him. Now let's appreciate the context. It's not just that he was running away from Yerushalayim because someone was trying to kill him. But this was after the story of the Chet Batsheva. And we all know about that story. We all understand that the story of David and Batsheva was a bit of, it was a more subtle than it appears, and that it has to be properly understood. But you have to understand that in those times, it caused a very, very great confusion. We're now further in history. We know that David HaMelech is one of the heroes of Jewish history. At that point, there was a lot of confusion about what had happened and where David stood with Hashem. To many people's minds, David was another example of a great person who fell and was rejected. You have to appreciate this, the place where David was at that point. And they saw, and this is actually how Avshalom framed it, when Avshalom made his rebellion, you know how Avshalom framed his rebellion? My father committed a terrible sin. He fell into Hashem's disfavor. Hashem doesn't like him anymore, and therefore he's replacing him with the better person, me. That was the way Avshalom framed his whole rebellion. And it was David HaMelech was living with terrible humiliation because the Bnei Yisrael were looking at him, not quite sure. There were many people in Klal Yisrael who were looking at him that way. This was a great person. We have such stories, a great person who messed up very badly and was rejected by Hashem. And now it's reaching a point where his son is rebelling against him. He has to run out of Yerushalayim after he had been king. And he has just a handful of loyal people who are still with him, joining him as he's leaving Yerushalayim. Now we know that, okay,
Very
you reach
good.
Jericho too
Okay.
late and
Okay.
you've
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
got everything ends happily. But you have to remember that David HaMelech at that time, he didn't know if he's only ever going to be back in Yerushalayim again. He didn't know if he's going to end his life as a fugitive running away. So he was at the lowest point in his life. And what happens as he's on his way out of Yerushalayim? As he's on his way out of Yerushalayim, he is accosted by a man by the name of Shimi ben Gera, who just we put it this way, had to rub the last salt into that terrible injury. And as he's running out of Yerushalayim, Shimon ben Gera comes and starts yelling all kinds of insults at him. And what happens now? So here, before we go on, I just want to step back a little bit, move back in time. David HaMelech made a very bold request to Hashem. David HaMelech said to Hashem, David HaMelech was a very bold in his ambitions. David HaMelech said to Hashem, you're known as Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Velokei Yaakov. You carry, like, as though you give yourself the title of Der Elokim. I want you to call yourself Elokei David. Okay? I think I'm worthy of that. I don't know if he said that, but he said, I want you to call also call yourself Elokei David. So Hashem said, I'll call myself Elokei David. You have to appreciate the tests that they withstood. And that's why they got to this great place. So then David HaMelech said something that Chazal identify as a mistake. David HaMelech said to Hashem, okay, so test me too. Now that is a mistake. A person should never ask for tests and never look for tests. When they come our way, we have to embrace them. We have to appreciate the tests is what gives our lives their significance and meaning. But never to look for tests and never to ask for them. And David HaMelech, again, according to his level, without getting into the whole issue correctly, he failed the test of Batsheva. This was Hashem's way of showing him, don't ask for tests. Okay, let's have that in the background. But David had this longing to be ident that Hashem should identify with him in the same way he identified as Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak. Okay, now let's move back to our story. David HaMelech is attacked by the Shimi ben Gera, who's yelling at him all these terrible things. And David's men say to him, listen, you still have the legal status of a king. That person ought to be killed. Al pi halacha, okay? Al pi halacha, this person ought to be killed. And what did David respond? David responded, no, don't do anything to him. His words were, Elokim amar lo yikaleh. I'm not hearing these words from his mouth. I'm hearing Hashem sending me a message through this person's mouth. Don't kill him. Just leave him. I want to give a little bit of an insight here because the truth is that David HaMelech had an obligation to kill him. A king is obligated, a king is mechuyev to uphold his dignity. And David HaMelech knew that he had to kill him. How did he handle it? What he did was he put it off and he said, it's going to have to happen, but not in my lifetime. On his deathbed, a deathbed, when a person is dying, that's a time when they're forgiving. It's not a time that they're busy with grudges. But as he was dying, he told Shlomo HaMelech, there are two accounts that still need to be settled. These were, again, this wasn't David with his own agendas, but David was saying, I know that I have an outstanding debt in halacha. And therefore, he told Shlomo, after I'm gone, you have to deal with Shimon ben Gera. But David wouldn't do it in his lifetime and didn't do it on the spot when he was terribly provoked. Now, what actually happened there was, and this is a perspective that Tochavis HaLevavos gives, was that David said, you know what? This guy deserves to be killed. But you know what? I'm going to be selfish now because I will never have such an amazing opportunity to overcome my ego. And I'm putting myself first. I'm going to take advantage of this because let's appreciate it. He was hurt, right? But on the contrary, that was exactly how he viewed it. He's being so provoked, so angered. He said, "This is not an opportunity to miss. I'm letting you go."
You give it to somebody else to do after you pass away, who says they're going to actually do it? I mean, if he was halakhically obligated to do it, so he doesn't do it in the moment when he's provoked. He waits a month and then he kills him. Why shouldn't he have done that?
So he, well, as far as the first part of the question goes, he relied on Shlomo fully, that Shlomo would know how to get the job done. He had a lot of faith in Shlomo. And therefore, he said, no, if I'm overcoming my own ego, I'm not gonna satisfy that egoistic element at all. It's not gonna happen in my lifetime.
Good.
Now, you know what?
I
You're
think that's
raising.
egoistic. Then he's deciding the task. instead of just following halakha and saying I have to kill him and I kill him. Isn't that egoistic too?
See, you're raising an interesting point. David HaMelech, you know what? Let me round out the point here, and then I want to come back to what you're raising. Because David HaMelech, once we get into him, we can go on and on and on, but I'm not going to keep you here for 6 hours. But first, let's round out what actually happened there, and then we'll get back to the question you raised. What actually happened at that moment when he overcame and he identified the test of the moment and said, I'm not going to respond. I'm being provoked in a certain way and I'm not going to respond. So I don't know if he knew it at the time, but this was, again, the lowest point of his life. But it was at this moment that he was catapulted to his highest madrega. And it was at that moment that Hashem said, David, now you made it. You asked that I be identified as Elikei David. Now you made it. It says that it was at this moment that David became the whatever this means. The regular Revi of the Merkava. The Merkava, there's a heavenly chariot, Hashem's chariot. Don't ask me what this means. But it has four wheels. One was Avraham, one was Yitzchak, one was Yaakov, and the fourth one was still vacant. And Hashem said, it's at this moment that now you became permanently established as the regular Revi of the Merkava, which means that his discretion was right on. But this now David put himself in that permanent place of fame as one of the most shining stars in Jewish history ever. And with all of his great accomplishments, this is pointed at as the low point in his life, but the high point in his Ruchnius career. What do I want out of all this? And we'll come back to the question you raised. What I want out of all this is the understanding of the significance of Hashem Echad in our lives. And that is that as we move through life, we're busy with all kinds of things. There are temptations, there are people. People are getting us upset, et cetera, et cetera. The Hashem Echad mentality is really my whole life is just with one big interaction with Hashem. If someone angers me, so David HaMelech, right? His words were Elokim HaMelech HaLel. This is not between me and Shimi ben Gera. This is about me and Hashem. If someone angers me, my understanding is that this is Hashem coming and saying, here, I'm throwing you a curveball. Don't see this person. Just see me. Or anything else that happens. If there's a temptation, a person is facing a temptation, and a person says to himself, you know what this temptation really is? It looks like a tantalizing piece of treif. It's not something that's relevant to anybody here. But whatever the temptation might be, looks like a tantalizing piece of treif. But you know what it really is? It's Hashem beckoning and saying to me, here's a chance for you to gain some more greatness. Here's a chance for you to get closer to me. All I see in my life is Hashem, more and more, the more I could. And it's not just in the negative sense, it's also in the positive sense. Let's say you sit down to something tantalizing that's perfectly kosher and you're about to eat it. So don't just see a delicious piece of cheesecake. See Hashem pampering you, see Hashem caring for you. This Hashem Echad mentality is simply seeing Hashem in everything I encounter throughout the day. Whatever's happening throughout the day, the negative, the positive, it's just dynamics between me and Hashem. And this is what David demonstrated here. And this is the point. This is how the Chovas HaLevavos is connecting this to practical life. The idea of if I truly sense Hashem's oneness, it means more than just, well, Hashem's the only God. It means that Hashem is really the one factor in my life. That's everything that's happening around me. What do you mean? It's this person with his choices who's making me problems. That's right. That's his kashrut with Hashem. But as far as I'm concerned, the reason this person was put in my life, the reason that Hashem is enabling him to cause me this distress, is because this is Hashem interacting with me, and this is Hashem offering me opportunity to become greater and to get closer to him.
Someone steals from you. You don't just say, well, Hashem didn't want me to have the money. We're supposed to try to get your money back, right?
That's right. That's right. Or let's say it's in another way. Person gets sick, right? Don't take a Tylenol. That's right. Don't take medicine. This is what Hashem wanted. So the issue of Hashem Echad certainly gets more complex. The example that we give in the case of the person who stole is, you say, okay, what does Hashem want from me? What does Hashem want here? What does Hashem want? So first, in terms of the reaction, is don't react instinctively. Don't lose it. Don't blow up. And then, in terms of what does Hashem want? Okay, I'm going to consult with Halacha now. Hashem says, here's what you should do, here's what you don't do. Your chiyuv hishtadlus, may impose on you to take this person to court, take this person to Beis Din, do it. But you know what? This is a beautiful story. I just heard this Friday, but actually, I also know it from my own family. I had two family relatives who had a serious dispute over money. A serious dispute over money. Now, Baruch Hashem, we're talking about two honest people. And nobody was disputing what the facts were. The question was only, what's supposed to happen now? Here's what happened, right? They went for a din Torah, but they went together. They went together, they laid down the facts together. Each one was kind of helping the other when each was telling their version of the story. They got their psak and everybody was happy. So let's say it's not as pleasant as that. But for a person to be able to keep his head and say, okay, I need to be acting on this. I need to be standing up for my rights. But what are the limits? How does Hashem want me to go about it? What should I be doing? What should I be not be doing? There may be strategies you can use in Beis Din or in court that might get you a better outcome, but Hashem says, no, I don't want that happening. So when we talk about just saying Hashem Echad, it doesn't necessarily mean just take it all in a fatalistic way. Hashem Echad could be a little bit more detailed. Yes, I want you to respond, but I want you to do it right. Yes, person is sick. I want you to take the medicine. Don't take treif medicine. What do you mean? I have to get better. That's where we come back to the Hashem Echad. So the Hashem Echad can get more nuanced, but it's all still the Hashem Echad. Now, back to your other question, and again, this is not our subject. I can't resist. But David HaMelech is an unbelievably inspiring personality. But you asked, one minute, David HaMelech has an halacha chiyuv. So here's a very interesting thing that the Pnei Yeshua really brings it out, and he says that yes, there was one area in halacha that David was mekel in. Now, mekel doesn't mean that you're not allowed to override halacha. But he was mekel. And you know what that is? It was in the halachas of upholding the dignity of the kingship. What do I mean by that? Well, here we just saw one example. But I'll give you another example. You remember the story of when the Aron HaKodesh was brought back from, the Aron HaKodesh had been captured by the Plishtim, and it was being kept in the home after it was brought back of a certain individual who hosted it for a long time. And then they were bringing it back to the Mishkan. And everybody was singing and dancing. Everybody was singing and dancing. Where would a king be at such an occasion? The king is supposed to be on a high balcony above, standing with his hands on the front rail and looking down at the crowd dancing. Michal, David's wife, was Shaul's daughter. That's what she remembered from her father. She knew how kings are supposed to act. Where was David then? David was right with the crowd. You have to picture it. You have to like picture the scene. Okay, I'm being a little illustrative here. But you have to picture he's right there with his arms around everybody else's shoulders, bouncing up and down, with his crown slightly askew, and his royal robes are bouncing up and down. And this is Mamash how she described it. She took him to task. She said to him, "What a dignified day for the Jewish people." Where your robe is bouncing up and down, they're able to see the flesh of his leg, which she considered it's just not how a king behaves. That's one example. Another example that the Gemara tells us: David did not follow the usual protocol of a king; he took liberties. Another example that the Gemara tells us: a woman, Chalila, miscarried in an earlier stage. And whatever it is that came out back in those days when the halachas of Tumah and Tara extended to everything, and you had to know, is she a Yoledes? What level of Tumah does she have? What karbanos does she need to bring? When can she reunite with her husband, etc.? So it depends on something came out. It's like a glob. It's like not anything very discernible. What is its status? There's a lot of implications on her. So what do you have to do? It has to be brought to a rav. David was a local rav, which means they have the king sitting in his throne room, and the woman couldn't get to the Rav right near her house. Who's the next Rav? She opens the directory, David HaMelech in his palace. And what she's actually doing is she has to bring a piece of something that's not pleasant to handle, right? And David HaMelech is sitting with his royal robes, might be meeting with other dignitaries, might be meeting with other kings. And someone comes in and tells him there's a woman who has something like this, she needs a psak on. Come in, bring her in. And he would take it in his hands and soil his hands and soil his royal robes. Why? The Gemara tells us just in order because she needs an answer. We don't want to make her, we don't want her to have to be held up. We don't want her to have to wait. That's something that kings do. Kings don't soil their hands with anything. These are all examples of David HaMelech's conduct. And the Pnei Yeshua says something very beautiful. The pasuk says that David said, Hashem, Shamro nafshi ki chasidani. You protect me because I am a chasid. Chasid means a devotee. I'm not getting into now the exact how what the pshat of the word is. It's a bigger discussion. What it means is someone who goes all the way. That's what chesed means, going to the extreme. Meaning, that's why we call it devotion. That's how we would translate it in this case, chasid. There's more to say about that, but I'm going to set that aside right now. In other words, David is telling Hashem, I'm going to the extreme in terms of my service of you and my and being mevatel myself to you, negating myself to you. That is going to come at the expense of my obligations toward the throne. And therefore, he said, Hashem, please, you take care of that. I am going to take this other approach. This is what he understood was his place of Avodas Hashem. And you take care of upholding the dignity of the throne. That was what he meant when he said, Shomron nafshi ki chasidani. You protect my place because I'm going all the way in your service. And that would presumably be the answer also in terms of the question about Shimi ben Gera. This was David applying a certain kula. Again, he wasn't not fulfilling the halacha. He was just being makel and saying, I'm going to hand it over to someone else to do it at a later time. Why? Because again, he said, I want my own personal avodah to be all the way to the extreme. Let's tie this back to our subject. This was one big, great tangent. But let's tie this back to our subject. This is the Hashem Echad mentality that we're talking about. When I say this, I mean before the divergent. But the Hashem Echad mentality is developing as much as I can to see only Hashem in my life. Now, of course, there are other people in your life. But the point is, as much as I can to be able to see the things that are happening, the things that I come across as dynamics between me and Hashem, as an interaction between me and Hashem. When I respond to things that come up in my life, I'm responding not to the person, not to the event, but I'm responding to Hashem. There might be a person here. I might actually be talking to the person, but I'm really aiming it on Hashem. Hashem is the one who I'm really trying to get through to in what's happening here. And I'll end this off. I'm going to have to end a bit early today, but I'll end this off with a beautiful insight that Rabbi Israel Tauber gave on this. And he said like this. He said, we start and end the day with a declaration of Hashem Echad. Right? We say Kriya Shema in the morning, we say Kriya Shema at night. And which we either call it Ma'ariv or Kriya Shema Lamita. The idea is when you say Hashem Echad in the morning, what you're doing is you are giving a certain, you're framing the day. I'm telling myself, wait, before I move out into my day, I want to frame it right. Hashem Echad. I'm reminding myself, whatever's going to be happening throughout the day is Hashem. When I go and sit down for breakfast, that's Hashem feeding me. When I go out to work and someone gets on my nerves, that's Hashem throwing me a curveball, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm trying to give myself the framing for the day. I start the day by saying Hashem Echad. Move out into the day, and you try, but it starts drifting, and things come up, and it's hard to remember Hashem Echad. And suddenly it becomes this person and that irritant, et cetera, et cetera. So you managed part. And part you didn't manage. Okay, you come back at the end of the day and you kind of re-tie it up in that way. You say, okay, in this situation, I forgot. In this situation, I didn't exactly get it. But at the end of the day, at least in retrospect, I'm coming back and saying, wait, 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 wait. I'm reframing my day, taking the whole day, looking at the day again and saying, you know what? It was all just Hashem Echad. But now listen to the point that he makes. And he says, this is why we, before we actually say Shema al Hamita, there's a little paragraph that we say, a little declaration that we make, and that is, it's a declaration of forgiveness. I forgive anybody who hurt me in any kind of way, etc., money, physically, my honor, by mistake, on purpose, etc., right? That whole thing. So Rabbi Tauber said, he said, what's the idea? The idea is exactly this. As I'm coming and reminding myself, you know, the day settled down, I'm in bed, it's quiet. I'm able to kind of like refocus, and I'm thinking about the different events of the day, and you know that person upset me, and that happened, and that happened. But I'm telling myself, 1 minute, 1 minute, 1 minute. As I'm settling back down, and I'm reminding myself that Hashem Echad, so it wasn't that person, and it wasn't that person, and it wasn't that person. It was all really just Hashem. So I look at Hashem and I say, you know what? I might have not remembered in the moment, but now I'm remembering, and therefore, get it. I'm Michael that person. I'm Michael that person. I'm reminding myself that this is all Hashem Echad. Okay, this is the first half of how the Chovas HaLevavos is setting up this cheshbon. We'll move over to the next part of it, Blue Nether, next week. We'll stop here.
Thank you.
Bring to you.